Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth has been keeping an eye on the reconciliation process in Congress. And this past week, a major step toward getting that started has taken place in the U.S. House of Representatives. It sort of defied the odds. So we're going to talk about that with Scott. Scott, good to have you here.
Thanks for having me back, Loman.
This process is reconciliation is something that I would venture to say most Americans do not understand. Maybe many members of Congress might not understand it either, but we took a major step this past week. So what does that do and how do we move forward from here?
Yeah, it is important to say that this was a major step in the right direction. The House of Representatives passed a budget resolution with 217 votes to 216. Only Thomas Massey of Kentucky voted against the resolution. And really, this was a nail-biter for many of us in the D.C. area watching it on C-SPAN. They held a vote open prior to the budget resolution for over an hour, trying to make sure that they could get the last holdout to vote yes and not fail on this budget resolution vote. Ultimately, a couple of members like Warren Davidson, Victoria Sparks, and Tim Burchett voted in support of the budget resolution just to keep the process moving forward. What this means is it's sort of like halftime with the budget resolution. You need both chambers of Congress, the House and Senate, to pass identical budget resolutions in order to start that reconciliation process where we're actually going to be debating legislation to extend the Trump tax cuts, enhance border security, enhance defense spending, have pro-energy reforms included, and some other anomalies that'll include deregulation, maybe some school choice, lots of things that have to do with federal spending, federal revenues, and even the debt limit. So the House budget resolution actually included a $4 trillion debt limit increase, but now as it's punted over to the United States Senate, there's a bunch of Republican senators that are saying, well, hold on a second, we have some ideas too. And right now, the prediction from me would be that the Senate does amend the House budget resolution, and that would require an additional passage in the House of Representatives. There's a few key issues that are outstanding right now. Number one, the House budget resolution allows for $4.5 trillion in tax cuts. And it also provides for $1.5 trillion in spending cuts at a minimum. If the House can pass a reconciliation bill with more than $2 trillion in spending cuts, the resolution allows for a dollar-for-dollar trade-off where you could cut an extra dollar of taxes for every federal dollar that's also cut. Well, we're not sure how that's going to fly over in the United States Senate. The Senate also wants permanency, so they're arguing for what's known as a current policy baseline. We talked about this a couple weeks ago on your show, and the summary that I would say is if Congress extends the tax cuts, you're not going to see any difference. But if they don't, you're going to see a huge tax increase. For the average family in America, it'll be over $1,600. And when you think about, you know, the rising inflation and sort of the economic malaise we've felt over the last 4 years, $1,600 is a lot to a family that's already paycheck. The Senate is trying to get permanency for these tax cuts. The problem with reconciliation is that if you look at the deficit impact of a bill outside of the 10-year window, it can't increase the deficit. And what the trade-off is between spending cuts and tax cuts and how that impacts our federal coffers and the budget situation outside of 10 years will determine whether or not it actually is within the reconciliation rules of the Byrd rule. And the Byrd rule is a complex rule in the United States Senate that determines whether each provision of the reconciliation bill is affecting federal revenues, federal spending, or the debt limit. And the parliamentarian, sort of the Wizard of Oz of the Senate, gets to determine whether a policy change is putting its thumb on the scale on the policy side or on the federal revenues or spending side. And basically, if it does not affect revenues or spending as much as it affects the policy outcome, then that provision falls from the bill based off of a point of order from the minority party. It's really complicated, but The good news for the American people is that we are moving forward toward this extension of the Trump tax cuts. It's like making sausage in Washington, D.C. It can be pretty ugly, but we do think that this is a really, really big step in the right direction for getting the America First Trump agenda done. Trump says he wants one big, beautiful bill to sign on his desk, and what the House resolution did was really initiate that process to get going.
One of the complicating factors here, Scott, is that you have conservatives in the House who are concerned about the deficit, who want to cut spending. And then there are some relative moderates in the Republican conference who are not really wanting to cut that deeply. Is that going to be a problem going forward? Somehow Speaker Johnson managed to hold it all together to get this process started, but a big challenge going forward?
Yeah, it is. And if you think about what the resolution is, it's basically the creation of the credit card, not spending or, you know, actually making any law. A budget resolution is not even signed into law by the president. So it's basically creating the framework. And the other complicating factor is that on March 14th, the continuing resolution expires. So there's a bunch of members in the House that wanted a path forward on what's going to happen on federal spending. Are we going to cut spending on an actual appropriation bill? As we've been discussing DOGE with Elon Musk, as we've been discussing the cuts that could be provided in the reconciliation bill, it's going to be a big, big challenge for them. The Democrats want to come out there and demagogue Republicans for cutting Medicaid, but the budget resolution does not even mention the word Medicaid. What it does is it provides instructions for deficit reduction to the Energy and Commerce Committee of the House of Representatives, and that committee has jurisdiction over Medicaid. So, it also has jurisdiction over a bunch of other anti-poverty welfare benefit programs. And what a lot of people don't understand is that Medicaid prior to 2009 and the Obamacare Medicaid expansion, and then also prior to the 60% increase that we felt underneath the Biden administration, that program has become totally unsustainable. And so when you think about the 25-year-old healthy adult that could be working and instead is on Medicaid, we need real reforms. We need to cut out the waste, fraud, and abuse to the Medicaid program. So it's going to be interesting to see how this process all unfolds. We're watching really closely here at the Club for Growth in Washington. And we are very optimistic about getting a big, beautiful bill done in the next 100 days.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. We certainly are going to keep an eye on this process as it goes step by step. Want to tell us a little bit about the Club for Growth, Scott?
Well, Club for Growth is united in the idea of economic freedom, liberty, and opportunity. The website is clubforgrowth.org. You can learn more and even sign up as a member for free.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Scott, thank you for being back with us.
You're welcome.